And how much do you think that saved you annually?
Hand, I haven't got that information, but it's phenomenal sums, Stuart, that we're now saving. But more than that, we've got the good grace of the courts back again, because they know now that any case that we do take, we've tried everything, we've worked with our partners, whether in housing benefits or social work or community planning partnership agencies, to make sure that when it does go to court, it's the last resort. And that's the huge thing. And you know, working with Shelter as well, keeping them appraised and absolutely on board with us, because eviction is the last resort. Because what we don't want is to create a spiral of somebody eventually becoming homeless because of that eviction, presenting back to social work colleagues, becoming a referral back into either us or another housing provider, but actually doing everything that we can up front to secure that tenancy, to sustain that tenancy, and to help that tenant and their family continue to live in that property.
And it's also a good example, I think, Graham, of when you think about it from the right perspective and when you've got data, how easy it is to actually work with other partners. You know, again, I always hear a lot of senior managers talking about things like, we must do more partnership working. And what that often means is people sitting in a room saying, like, how are we going to do partnership working? But none of them ever bring data to the table. None of them ever have information on how the system works or how the policies work, when there is work that has to go cross-functionally or across organisations. So for me, again, it comes back to having the data, which allows you to influence and get others on board with the change. Would you agree with that, that the data is
totally
a big
Stuart,
key in partnership working?
Yes, absolutely. There was a meeting this morning with just a whole pile of other partners out in the West, and a big discussion, and we started looking at some case studies about tenants with addiction problems. And you realise that there's pressure on the addiction services. I think the lad there talked about 2,000 open cases. And I think it's only because I've now been involved in systems thinking for the best part of a year and a half that I can understand. And you think, actually, I wonder how many of those open cases always get looked at, how many of them should need referred on to other agencies and support, and can we do something to help him get the knowledge so that you can actually look underneath the root cause of some of those issues and change having 2,000 open cases into something much more meaningful, so that we're actually helping tenants sustain their tenancies. And that's just alcohol and drug addiction. The debate then started moving on to new types of addiction, like online bingo and online roulette, and we realised that there's a whole hidden problem in there that none of us as agencies have really started addressing yet, but which will impact, in our case, perhaps on rent not being able to be paid, and on other gas and electricity providers, for example, on their fuel bills not being paid. And it suddenly becomes a huge social challenge that there's a different way of looking at it by doing it together in partnership.
And I think as well, what happens when you start to use better methods of management, suddenly you can start to elevate what you believe your purpose is. You know, so for example, if you take repairs, you can start off by saying, well, you know, our purpose is to do the right repair at the right time in a way that suits the client. And then you can start to say, well, actually, if we think about this differently, how about if we had a situation where our planned works and planned maintenance were so good that actually we had a dramatic drop in the repairs that needed to be done, and really then it was only a few repairs here and there, down to, you know, because maybe there was some tenant error or an accident or, you know, door breaking, but the repairs don't become routine anymore, and suddenly your whole purpose changes. Do you agree with that you know, you can really change what you're all about?
Yeah, and that's really where we're now starting to get to, and to, you know, this has been moving through several phases. We now have a customer contact centre where all of our calls come in 24 hours, including these repair calls, and is really a lot easier to analyse what's coming through. And we do have a growing programme of cyclic and planned maintenance for the very reasons that you're outlining. And the more that we do that, then we should be seeing a completely dramatic drop in the number of reactive repairs that are being requested. And I think that's still one of our challenges as we work through getting that data and understanding it and looking at where we've done our major capital investment, and we've done a lot right across Glasgow now. Now where we're doing the cyclic maintenance and build that whole programme up so that, as you said, the reactive pairs become the exception rather than the norm.
Yeah. Okay, so to summarise, we've got look at the system from the customer's point of view. We've got gather data and get knowledge. We've got think about the system holistically. And there's two other things that you said that I'd like to pick up on. One was all about leadership and how well it was led by senior leadership. I've got to be honest with you and say that's not normal. You know, if I go back over the past 11 years I've been doing this, I've met maybe 4 or 5 exceptional leaders. How well was your program led, and what do you think are the lessons for other people who are saying, well, I'd like to dabble with change, but as a leader, I just don't really have time for it? What would be the lessons there?
The short answer really is, if you're the leader of the organization, you've got to get behind it. We were driven by Martin, who's now our chief executive. We were driven by another senior manager, Mags, who absolutely got systems thinking and absolutely sold system thinking to the whole organization. But don't leave it to junior or middle ranking managers and abrogate your responsibility, or just think that they can get on with it and just touch base with you like feeding back to a project board. If you're the senior manager, the leader of the whole organization, you've got to get behind this to make it work. Partly because you give it credibility, partly because you are seen to drive it and will make it drive, and you will see the benefits that will come out of it for your whole organisation, and you'll be able to join different parts of your organisation up so that they're all getting the whole thing.
And what does getting behind it mean? I mean, what does that mean day to day, week to week?
For me, sure, it's about getting your sleeves up, getting your hands dirty, and getting out there. It's about, if I give you an example of what we did with our community housing managers when we went into the local offices, some of them do sit on the shop floor with their staff, some of them have their own little office where you can close the door. But what we actually did was we took them round, we opened up filing cabinets, we had them sitting on the front reception desk listening to the customers, because you think you know what's going on out in your office and you probably got a strong feel for it. But actually, to sit and experience what your clerical officer or your front reception desk or your housing officer experiences, to then check, and I suppose if you use the part of the systems thinking with the check plan do, to actually check what has been going on in house letting or tenancy visits or rent arrear discussions, you suddenly realise that maybe what you thought was happening isn't actually what should be happening. And
did any of them fight you on that and say, you know, oh, we don't have time to be going out? And did any of them then change their view once they'd been out and seen some of the things that really were going on?
Yeah, I think two things happened. One is managers perhaps trusted their staff and thought they understood what was going on. And of course, when you they exposed for themselves some of the fault lines and some of the light bulb moments of, I can't believe that my customers have been going through some of these. The example of the rent payments getting passed from one officer to another and sitting for half an hour in a waiting area. I think when they realised that and they were putting themselves in that customer's shoes, they realised the light bulb was going on for them too, and they had to cause change. And it's about holding them back, because it's so easy to blame the staff and to blame the individual employees. And it's not the employees. They've been trying to do the best that they can, working with a system that this organisation or its predecessor organisation or just through osmosis over the years we've caused to happen. And it's about recognising that it's our system that had to change. The people are good people. They get up in the morning and they come in determined to do a good job. But, hey, we put some different strictures and processes in place and they were just following them, and that's what they did. And that's what the managers had to say. It wasn't the individuals that were at fault. It was the individuals needed a system changed or a barrier to be broken through or a policy to be changed so that they could then actually better serve that customer. And that needs leadership, and that's why it needs to come from the top, so that you can get a policy paper through the board or change a process as well, because not all frontline staff would be able to make that change happen. If I can go on, Stuart, we've got we created them things called best groups, and okay. That's where we're able to get the best ideas. What's going on, business excellence, it's what we're trying to achieve in all of our areas of work. And that's because staff have ideas. Staff have great knowledge and experience that actually they can shape some of the changes, letting policy ideas or some of the stuff that we'll do with neighbour environmental teams so that you don't get the cleansing and the close cleaning and the backcourt maintenance all happening at the same time. But actually it's the grass cutting that happened last after the close cleaner's been in, and you've got grass again before the next week's visit.
Yeah, so the key lesson being, we want frontline staff to drive the change, but it needs to be supported by leaders, because some of the big changes, actually it's only leaders that can make those decisions. I mean, for me, I'm working with a client at the moment down in Lincoln City, and one of the things that we've been talking about is how the trading account can really destroy the repair service, and how the trading account really causes this divide of relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, it's really only the director and the chief exec can say, right, we're going to have a go at running this service without the trading account. Now, the idea and the data came from the frontline people, but it was the senior execs that actually needed to say it, and that were the only ones that could make the decision around, well, let's try it without it and see what happens. And I think for me, it's that kind of relationship between having the data, but also having the seniority and the people behind you that can support those kind of decisions.
Definitely.
One final thing to pick up on then, which I think is really important from a change management perspective, is I noticed that you said, as business improvement leads or service improvement service development managers, you supported the local housing managers. And I think one of the big mistakes that internal and external consultants can make is that they go in and they almost do all the analysis themselves, do the redesign themselves, try to change themselves, and then ask the question, why did I not get any buy-in?
Yep.
Now, I'm assuming that you're using the word supporting, because that means that, in essence, you facilitated it, but driving the change actually had to come from the people in the local housing associations themselves.
Yes, and that was very much our philosophy when, in our preparation phase, when working with Vicky from your organisation to plan how we were going to go out to the offices. And it was absolutely right, because we could have gone into those offices for 3 weeks. We could have run the presentations and the sessions direct to the staff, left the manager sitting in their office or wherever. But actually, by showing the managers how to use the process mapping and to dig around themselves, they then have the knowledge and the ability to keep doing that. So we can step back, as you're right, internal consultants, we can't be in every office every minute of every day, but what we can do is awaken those managers so they can keep doing it. They then also had their staff on board, because the staff then understood the whole systems thinking. They understood where the customer was coming from, looking at that. They could understand some of the... We use these wind charts, which I presume your listeners are familiar with, showed all the variance in some of our different measures. We set up visual measures boards that we'd seen up at Velux and other companies. And absolutely, it means that every fortnight and every week, the managers are able to stand around and have the chats, recognise where the new barriers are, what needs to be broken through that they have the power to break through, or what they need to escalate up to somebody more senior that can break through. But they could only have done that by going through the pain for themselves and by going through that pain with their teams. And you're right, we facilitated, and then we were able to step back because we were not so deeply embedded with that team. They had the skills and the knowledge and the experience to do it now continually for themselves. I've mentioned the reduction in the cases that were taken to court, and the fact that our rent payments are now coming in. We've now got our best ever level of rent arrears, or therefore the best level of rent payments we've had for, I think, forever actually, since GHA started. We've got end-to-end letting times down under 40 days now, and in some cases we've got many offices actually getting their relets down to under 28 days. We're now striving and driving forward, and the more we can do, the more we understand, the better people are able to to get that. We've got offices now starting to look at, can they actually get the lets done within 2 weeks?
Okay.
Yeah, that means you get the tenant in, you get the benefits, you get them sorted out, you get that whole package that was talked about. I think that sums it up. We've focused on rents, we've focused on letting. We're now trying to help some of our other teams. We're looking at our capital investment program. We've been looking at IT and the service desk there and how it helps the internal customers. We've had a look at our factoring service, and we're starting to get them to look at what they do with their owner-occupiers and billings, and how, again, we can just keep driving improvement after improvement after improvement, because we do strive to be that A-rated organisation that I mentioned earlier.
Excellent. Okay, so let me finally summarise then. Main lessons are, look at the business from the customer's point of view, take a holistic view of the service, look at the whole thing end to end. Make sure it's led well by leadership, and that's senior leaders, not just the middle managers, and make sure that the role of the consultant is there to support, not to actually do the intervention, so that you can step away. Is that right?
I think that sums it up beautifully, Stuart.
So what would be the one final piece of advice that you would give to anyone who was thinking about getting in a change program?
Plan, talk to others, and use people like yourself and Vicky to do it. Anticipate what your purpose is, because quite often what you think your business should be doing isn't actually what you're doing from your customer. And finally, focus on everything from your customer's point of view and see, stand out on their side of the counter and look in and see what they're seeing every day when they pull down a service from you. And if it's right, fine, but I think you'll find that most times you can do it even better, because those customers aren't getting the 100% service that all of us should be providing to them, and we can do it better if we look at it from their point of view.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you, Stuart. Good to talk to you.